Some of the men who tried to climb up the steps cut in the rock are shot down by the arrows of the orcs. Turin and Beleg retreated into the cave and rolled a great stone across the passage. In these straits Androg revealed to them the hidden stair leading to the flat summit of Amon-Ruth, which he had found when lost in the caves, as has been told. Then Turin and Beleg, with many of their men, went up by the stair and came out on the summit, surprising those few of the orcs who had already come there by the outer path, and driving them over the edge. For a little while they held off the orcs climbing up the rock, but they had no shelter on the bare summit, and many were shot from below. Most valiant of these was Androg, who fell, mortally wounded, by an arrow at the head of the outside stair. Then Turin and Beleg, with the 10 men left to them, drew back to the centre of the summit, where there was a standing stone, and making a ring about it, they defended themselves until all were slain, save Beleg and Turin, for over them the orcs cast nets. Turin was bound and carried off. Beleg, who was wounded, was bound likewise, but he was laid on the ground, with wrists and ankles tied to iron pins driven into the rock. Now the orcs, finding the issue of the secret stair, left the summit and entered Barin Dunwith, which they defiled and ravaged. They did not find Mem lurking in his caves, and when they had departed from Amon-Ruth, Mem appeared on the summit, and going to where Beleg lay prostrate and unmoving, he gloated over him while he sharpened a knife. But Mem and Beleg were not the only living beings on that stony height. Androg, though himself wounded to the death, crawled among the dead bodies towards them, and seizing a sword, he thrust it at the dwarf. Shrieking in fear, Mem ran to the brink of the cliff and disappeared. He fled down a steep and difficult goat's path that was known to him. But Androg, putting forth his last strength, cut through the wristbands and fetters that bound Beleg, and so released him. But dying, he said, "My hurts are too deep, even for your healing." Chapter 9. The Death of Beleg. Beleg sought among the dead for Turin to bury him, but he could not discover his body. He knew then that Hurin's son was still alive and taken to Angband. But he remained perforce in Barin Dunwith until his wounds were healed. He set out then, with little hope, to try to find the trail of the orcs, and he came upon their tracks near the crossings of Teglin. There they divided, some passing along the eaves of the forest of Brethil towards the ford of Brithiach, while others turned away westwards. And it seemed plain to Beleg that he must follow those that went direct, with greatest speed, to Angband, making for the pass of Anach. Therefore he journeyed on through Dimbar, and up to the pass of Anach in Ered Gorgoroth, the mountains of terror, and so to the highlands of Taur Nufuin, the forest under night, a region of dread and dark enchantment, of wandering and despair. Benighted in that evil land, it chanced that Beleg saw a small light among the trees, and going towards it he found an elf lying asleep beneath a great dead tree. Beside his head was a lamp, from which the covering had slipped off. Then Beleg woke the sleeper, and gave him Lembas, and asked him what fate had brought him to this terrible place. And he named himself Gwyndor, son of Gwylin. Grieving, Beleg looked at him, for Gwyndor was but a bent and timid shadow of his former shape and mood, when in the battle of unnumbered tears that lord of Nargothrond rode to the very doors of Angband, and there was taken. For few of the Noldor whom Morgoth took captive were put to death because of their skill in mining for metals and gems, and Gwyndor was not slain, but put to labour in the mines of the north. These Noldor possessed many of the Feanorian lamps, which were crystals hung in a fine chain net, the crystals being ever shining with an inner blue radiance marvellous for finding the way in the darkness of night or in tunnels. Of these lamps they themselves did not know the secret. Many of the mining elves thus escaped from the darkness of the mines, for they were able to bore their way out. But Gwyndor received a small sword from one who worked in the forges, and when working in a stone gang, turned suddenly on the guards. He escaped, but with one hand cut off, and now he lay exhausted under the great pines of Taur Nufuin. From Gwyndor, Beleg learned that the small company of orcs ahead of them, from whom he had hidden, had no captives and were going with speed. An advance guard, perhaps, bearing report to Angband. At this news, Beleg despaired, for he guessed that the tracks that he had seen turning away westwards after the crossings of Teiglin were those of a greater host, who had in orc fashion gone marauding in the lands, seeking food and plunder, and might now be returning to Angband by way of the narrow land, the long defile of Sirion, much further to the west. If this were so, his sole hope lay in returning to the fort of Brithiach, and then going north to Tol Sirion. But scarcely had he determined on this, and they heard the noise of a great host approaching through the forest from the south, and hiding in the boughs of a tree, they watched the servants of Morgoth pass, moving slowly, laden with booty and captives, surrounded by wolves. And they saw Turin, with chained hands, being driven on with whips. Then Beleg told him of his own errand in Taur Nufuin, and Gwyndor sought to dissuade him from his quest, saying that he would but join Turin in the anguish that awaited him. But Beleg would not abandon Turin, and despairing himself, he aroused hope again in Gwyndor's heart, and together they went on, following the orcs, until they came out of the forest on the high slopes that ran down to the barren dunes of the Anfoglith. There, within sight of the peaks of Thangorodrim, the orcs made their encampment in a bare dale, and set wolf sentinels all about its rim. There they fell to carousing and feasting on their booty, and after tormenting their prisoners, most fell drunkenly asleep. By that time day was failing, and it became very dark. A great storm rode up out of the west, and thunder rumbled far off as Beleg and Gwyndor crept towards the camp. When all in the camp were sleeping, Beleg took up his bow, and in the darkness shot four of the wolf sentinels on the south side, one by one, and silently. Then, in great peril, they entered in, and they found Turin, fettered, hand and foot, and tied to a tree. All about knives that had been cast at him by his tormentors were embedded in the trunk, but he was not hurt, and he was senseless in a drugged stupor, or swooned in a sleep of utter weariness. Then Beleg and Gwyndor cut the bonds from the tree, and bore Turin out of the camp. but he was too heavy to carry far, and they could go no further than to a thicket of thorn trees, high on the slopes above the camp. There they laid him down. Now the storm drew nearer, and lightning flashed on Thangorodrim. Beleg drew his sword, Anglachel, and with it he cut the fetters that bound Turin. But fate was that day more strong, for the blade of Eol, the dark elf, slipped in his hand and pricked Turin's foot. Then Turin was roused into a sudden wakefulness of rage and fear, and seeing a form bending over him in the gloom with a naked blade in hand, he leapt up with a great cry, believing that orcs were come again to torment him, and grappling with him in the darkness, he seized Anglachel and slew Beleg Cuthalion, thinking him a foe. But as he stood, finding himself free and ready to sell his life dearly against imagined foes, there came a great flash of lightning above them, and in its light he looked down on Beleg's face. Then Turin stood stone still and silent, staring on that dreadful death, knowing what he had done. And so terrible was his face, lit by the lightning that flickered all about them, that Gwyndor cowered down upon the ground, and dared not raise his eyes. But now in the camp beneath, the orcs were roused, both by the storm and by Turin's cry, and discovered that Turin was gone. But no search was made for him, for they were filled with terror by the thunder that came out of the west, believing that it was sent against them by the great enemies beyond the sea. Then a wind arose, and great rains fell, and torrents swept down from the heights of Tawr Nufuin. And though Gwyndor cried out to Turin, warning him of their utmost peril, he made no answer, but sat unmoving and unweeping beside the body of Beleg Cuthalion, lying in the dark forest, slain by his hand, even as he cut the bonds of thraldom from him. When morning came, the storm was passed away eastward over Lothland, and the sun of autumn rose hot and bright. But the orcs, hating this almost as much as the thunder, and believing that Turin would have fled far from that place, and all trace of his flight be washed away, they departed in haste, eager to return to Angband. Far off, Gwyndor saw them marching northward over the steaming sands of Unfoglith. Thus it came to pass that they returned to Morgoth empty-handed, and left behind them the son of Húrin, who sat crazed and unwitting on the slopes of Tawr Nufuin, bearing a burden heavier than their bonds. Then Gwyndor roused Turin to aid him in the burial of Beleg, and he rose as one that walked in sleep. And together they laid Beleg in a shallow grave, and placed beside him Belthrongding, his great bow, that was made of black yew wood. But the dread sword Anglachel Gwyndor took, saying that it were better that it should take vengeance on the servants of Morgoth than lie useless in the earth. And he took also the lembas of Melian to strengthen them in the wild. Thus ended Beleg's strong bow, truest of friends, greatest in skill of all that harboured in the woods of Beleriand in the elder days, at the hand of him whom he most loved. And that grief was graven on the face of Turin, and never faded. But courage and strength were renewed in the elf of Nargothrond, and departing from Tawr Nufuin, he led Turin far away. Never once, as they wandered together on long and grievous paths, did Turin speak, and he walked as one without wish or purpose, while the year waned and winter drew on over the northern lands. But Gwyndor was ever beside him, to guard him and guide him, And thus they passed westward over Sirion, and came at length to the beautiful Mere and Ethel Ivrin, the springs whence Narog rose beneath the mountains of shadow. There Gwyndor spoke to Turin, saying, "Awake, Turin, son of Húrin! On Ivrin's lake is endless laughter. She is fed from crystal fountains, unfailing, and guarded from defilement by Ulmo, Lord of Waters, who wrought her beauty in ancient days." Then Turin knelt and drank from that water, and suddenly he cast himself down, and his tears were unloosed at last, and he was healed of his madness. There he made a song for Beleg, and he named it Leir Cú Beleg, the song of the great bow, singing it aloud, heedless of peril. And Gwyndor gave the sword Anglachel into his hands, and Turin knew that it was heavy and strong, and had great power. But its blade was black and dull, and its edges blunt. Then Gwyndor said, "This is a strange blade, and unlike any that I have seen in Middle-earth. It mourns for Beleg, even as you do. But be comforted, for I return to Nargothrond of the house of Finarfin, where I was born and dwelt before my grief. You shall come with me, and be healed and renewed." "Who are you?" said Turin. "A wandering elf, a thrall escaped, whom Beleg met and comforted," said Gwyndor. "Yet once I was Gwyndor, son of Gwylin, a lord of Nargothrond, until I went to the Nirnaith Arnoidiad, and was enslaved in Angband. Then have you seen Húrin, son of Galdor, the warrior of Dorlomin?" said Turin. "I have not seen him," said Gwyndor, "but the rumour runs through Angband that he still defies Morgoth, and Morgoth has laid a curse upon him and all his kin." "That I do believe," said Turin. And now they arose, and departing from Ethel Ivrin, they journeyed southward along the banks of Narog, until they were taken by scouts of the elves, and brought as prisoners to the hidden stronghold. Thus did Turin come to Nargothrond. Chapter 10 Turin in Nargothrond. At first his own people did not know Gwyndor, who went out young and strong, and returned now, seeming as one of the aged among mortal men, because of his torments and his labours, and now also he was maimed. But Finduila's daughter of Orodreth the king knew him, and welcomed him, for she had loved him, and indeed they were betrothed before the Nirnaeth, and so greatly did Gwyndor love her beauty, that he named her Failivrin, which is the sheen of the sun upon the pools of Ivrin. Thus Gwyndor came home, and for his sake Turin was admitted with him, for Gwyndor said that he was a valiant man, dear friend of Beleg Cúthalion of Doriath. But when Gwyndor would tell his name, Turin checked him, saying, "I am Agarwain, the son of Umarth, which is the blood-stained son of ill fate, a hunter in the woods." But though the elves guessed that he took these names because of the slaying of his friend, not knowing other reasons, they questioned him no more. The sword Anglachel was forged anew for him by the cunning smiths of Nargothrond, and though ever black, its edges shone with pale fire. Then Turin himself became known in Nargothrond as Mormegil the Black Sword, for the rumour of his deeds with that weapon. But he named the sword Gurthang, Iron of Death, Because of his prowess and his skill in warfare with orcs, Turin found favor with Orodreth and was admitted to his council. Now Turin had no liking for the manner of fighting of the elves of Nargothrond, of ambush and stealth and secret arrow, and he urged that it be abandoned, and that they should use their strength to attack the servants of the enemy, to open battle and pursuit. But Gwyndor spoke ever against Turin in this matter in the council of the king, saying that he had been in Angband, and had had a glimpse of the power of Morgoth, and had some inkling of his designs. Petty victories will prove profitless at the last, he said, for thus Morgoth learns where the boldest of his enemies are to be found, and gathers strength great enough to destroy them. All the might of the elves and Edain united sufficed only to contain him, and to gain the peace of a siege. Long indeed, but only so long as Morgoth bided his time before he broke the leaguer, and never again can such a union be made. Only in secrecy lies hope of survival, until the Valar come. The Valar, said Turin, they have forsaken you, and they hold men in scorn. What use to look westward across the endless sea, to a dying sunset in the west? There is but one Valar with whom we have to do, and that is Morgoth. And if in the end we cannot overcome him, at least we can hurt him and hinder him, for victory is victory, however small, nor is its worth only from what follows from it, but it is expedient also. Secrecy is not finally possible. Arms are the only wall against Morgoth. If you do nothing to halt him, all Beleriand will fall under his shadow before many years are past, and then one by one he will smoke you out of your earths. And what then? A pitiable remnant will fly south and west to cower on the shores of the sea, caught between Morgoth and Ossé. Better then to win a time of glory, though it be short-lived, for the end will be no worse. You speak of secrecy, and say that therein lies the only hope. But could you ambush and waylay every scout and spy of Morgoth to the last and least, so that none came ever back with tidings to Angband? Yet from that he would learn that you lived, and guess where. And this also I say, though mortal men have little life beside the span of the elves, they would rather spend it in battle than fly or submit. The defiance of Húrin Thalion is a great deed, and though Morgoth slay the doer, he cannot make the deed not to have been. Even the lords of the West will honour it, and is it not written into the history of Arda, which neither Morgoth nor Manwë can unwrite? You speak of high things, Gwyndor answered, and plain it is that you have lived among the Eldar. But a darkness is on you if you set Morgoth and Manwë together, or speak of the Valar as the foes of elves and men, for the Valar scorn nothing, and least of all the children of Ilúvatar. Nor do you know all the hopes of the Eldar. It is a prophecy among us that one day a messenger from Middle-earth will come through the shadows to Valinor, and Manwë will hear, and Mandos relent. For that time shall we not attempt to preserve the seed of the Noldor and of the Edain also? And Círdan dwells now in the south, and there is building of ships. But what know you of ships or of the sea? You think of yourself and of your own glory, and bid us each do likewise. But we must think of others beside ourselves, for not all can fight and fall, and those we must keep from war and ruin, while we can. Then send them to your ships while there is yet time, said Turin. They will not be parted from us, said Gwyndor. Even could Círdan sustain them. We must abide together as long as we may, and not court death. All this I have answered, said Turin. Valiant defence of the borders, and hard blows, ere the enemy gathers. In that course lies the best hope of your long abiding together. And do those that you speak of love such skulkers in the woods, hunting strays like a wolf, better than one who puts on his helm and figured shield, and drives away the foe, be they far greater than all his host? At least the women of the Edain do not. They did not hold back the men from the Nirnaeth Arnoediad. But they suffered greater woe than if that field had not been fought, said Gwyndor. But Turin advanced greatly in the favour of Orodreth, and he became the chief counsellor of the king, who submitted all things to his advice. In that time the elves of Nargothrond forsook their secrecy, and great store of weapons were made. And by the counsel of Turin, the Noldor built a mighty bridge over the Narog from the doors of Felagund for the swifter passage of their arms, since war was now chiefly east of Narog in the guarded plain. As its north march, Nargothrond now held the debatable land about the sources of Ginglith, Narog, and the fringes of the woods of Nuath. Between Nenning and Narog no orc came, and east of Narog their realm went to the Teiglin and the borders of the moors of the Nimin Noeg. Gwyndor fell into dishonour, for he was no longer forward in arms, and his strength was small, and the pain of his maimed left arm was often upon him. But Turin was young, and only now reached his full manhood, and he was in truth the son of Morwen Eilethwen to look upon. Tall, dark-haired and pale-skinned, with grey eyes, and his face more beautiful than any other among mortal men in the elder days. His speech and bearing were those of the ancient kingdom of Doriath, and even among the elves he might be taken at first meeting for one from the great houses of the Noldor. So valiant was Turin, and so exceedingly skilled in arms, especially with sword and shield, that the elves said that he could not be slain, save by mischance, or an evil arrow from afar. Therefore they gave him dwarf mail to guard him. And in a grim mood he found in the armouries a dwarf mask, all gilded, and he put it on before battle, and his enemies fled before his face. Now that he had had his way, and all went well, and he had work to do after his heart, and had honour in it, he was courteous to all, and less grim than of old, so that well nigh all hearts were turned to him, and many called him Adanethel, the elf-man. But most of all, Finduelas, the daughter of Orodreth, found her heart moved whenever he came near or was in hall. She was golden-haired, after the manner of the house of Finarfin, and Turin began to take pleasure in the sight of her and in her company, for she reminded him of his kindred and the women of Dor Lumin in his father's house. At first he met her only when Gwyndor was by, but after a while she sought him out, so that they met at times alone, though it seemed to be by chance. Then she would question him about the Edain, of whom she had seen few and seldom, and about his country and his kin. Then Turin spoke freely to her concerning these things, though he did not name the land of his birth, nor any of his kindred. And on a time he said to her, I had a sister, Laleith, or so I named her, and of her you put me in mind. But Laleith was a child, a yellow flower in the green grass of spring. And had she lived, she would now, maybe, have become dimmed with grief. But you are queenly, and as a golden tree, I would I had a sister so fair. But you are kingly, said she, even as the lords of the people of Fingolfin. I would I had a brother so valiant. And I do not think that Agarwain is your name, nor is it fit for you, Adanadel. I call you Thurin the Secret. At this Thurin started, but he said, That is not my name, and I am not a king, for our kings are of the Eldar, as I am not. Now Thurin marked that Gwyndor's friendship grew cooler towards him, and he wondered also that whereas at first the woe and horror of Angband had begun to be lifted from him, now he seemed to slip back into care and sorrow, and he thought, It may be that he is grieved that I oppose his counsels and have overcome him. I would it were not so. For he loved Gwyndor as his guide and healer, and was filled with pity for him. But in those days the radiance of Finduilas also became dimmed, her footsteps slow and her face grave, and she grew wan and thin. And Thurin, perceiving this, surmised that the words of Gwyndor had set fear in her heart of what might come to pass. In truth, Finduilas was torn in mind, for she honoured Gwyndor and pitied him, and wished not to add one tear to his suffering. But against her will, her love for Thurin grew day by day, and she thought of Beren and Lúthien. But Thurin was not like Beren. He did not scorn her, and was glad in her company. Yet she knew that he had no love of the kind she wished. His mind and heart were elsewhere, by rivers in springs long past. Then Thurin spoke to Finduilas and said, Do not let the words of Gwyndor affright you. He has suffered in the darkness of Angband, and it is hard for one so valiant to be thus crippled and backward perforce. He needs all solace and a longer time for healing. I know it well, she said. But we will win that time for him, said Thurin. Margothrond shall stand. Never again will Morgoth the Craven come forth from Angband, and all his reliance must be on his servants. Thus says Melian of Doriath, They are the fingers of his hands, and we will smite them and cut them off till he draws back his claws. Margothrond shall stand. Perhaps, said she, it shall stand if you can achieve it. But have a care, Thurin. My heart is heavy when you go out to battle, lest Nargothrond be bereaved. Afterwards, Thurin sought out Gwyndor, and said to him, Gwyndor, dear friend, you are falling back into sadness. Do not so, for your healing will come in the houses of your kin, and in the light of Finduilas. Then Gwyndor stared at Thurin, but he said nothing, and his face was clouded. Why do you look upon me so? Said Thurin. Often your eyes have gazed at me strangely of late. How have I grieved you? I have opposed your counsels, but a man must speak as he sees, nor hide the truth that he believes, for any private cause. I would that we were one in mind, for to you I owe a great debt, and I shall not forget it. Will you not? Said Gwyndor. Nonetheless, your deeds and your counsels have changed my home and my kin. Your shadow lies upon them. Why should I be glad who have lost all to you? Thurin did not understand these words, and did but guess that Gwyndor begrudged him his place in the heart and counsels of the king. But Gwyndor, when Thurin had gone, sat alone in dark thought, and he cursed Morgoth, who could thus pursue his enemies with woe, whithersoever they might run. "Now, at last," he said, "I believe the rumour of Angband, that Morgoth has cursed Húrin and all his kin." And going to find Finduilas, he said to her, "A sadness and doubt is upon you, and too often now I miss you, and begin to guess that you are avoiding me. Since you tell me not the cause, I must guess. Daughter of the house of Finarfin, let no grief lie between us. For though Morgoth has laid my life in ruin, you still I love. But go whither love leads you, for I am become unfit to wed you, and neither my prowess nor my counsel have any honour more." Then Finduilas wept. "Weep not yet," said Gwyndor, "but beware, lest you have cause. Not fitting is it that the elder children of Ilúvatar should wed the younger. Nor is it wise, for they are brief and soon pass, to leave us in widowhood while the world lasts. Neither will fate suffer it, unless it be once or twice only, or some high cause of doom that we do not perceive. But this man is not Beren, even if he be both as fair and as brave. A doom lies on him, a dark doom. Enter not into it. And if you will, your love shall betray you to bitterness and death. For hearken to me, though he be indeed a Garwayan son of Umarth, his right name is Túrin, son of Húrin, whom Morgoth holds in Angband, and has cursed all his kin. Doubt not the power of Morgoth Bauglir. Is it not written in me?" Then Finduilas rose, and queenly indeed she looked. "Your eyes are dimmed, Gwyndor," she said. "You do not see or understand what has here come to pass. Must I now be put to double shame to reveal the truth to you? For I love you, Gwyndor, and I am ashamed that I love you not more, but have taken a love even greater, from which I cannot escape. I did not seek it, and long I put it aside. But if I have pity for your hurts, have pity on mine. Túrin loves me not, nor will." "You say this," said Gwyndor, "to take the blame from him whom you love. Why does he seek you out, and sit long with you, and come ever more glad away?" "Because he also needs solace," said Finduilas, "and is bereaved of his kin. You both have your needs. But what of Finduilas? Now is it not enough that I must confess myself to you unloved, but that you should say that I speak so to deceive?" "Nay, a woman is not easily deceived in such a case," said Gwyndor. "Nor will you find many who will deny that they are loved, if that is true. If any of us three be faithless, it is I, but not in will. But what of your doom and rumours of Angband? What of death and destruction? The Adanathel is mighty in the tale of the world, and his stature shall reach yet to Morgoth in some far day to come. He is proud," said Gwyndor. "But also he is merciful," said Finduilas. "He is not yet awake, but still pity can ever pierce his heart, and he will never deny it. Pity, maybe, shall be ever the only entry. But he does not pity me. He holds me in awe, as were I both his mother and a queen." "Maybe Finduilas spoke truly, seeing with the keen eyes of the Eldar, and now Túrin, not knowing what had passed between Gwyndor and Finduilas, was ever gentler towards her, as she seemed more sad. But on a time Finduila said to him, "Thurin Adanathel, why did you hide your name from me? Had I known who you were, I should not have honoured you less, but I should better have understood your grief." "What do you mean?" he said. "Whom do you make me?" "Turin, son of Hurin Thalion, captain of the north." Now when Turin learned from Finduilas of what had passed, he was wrathful, and he said to Gwendor, "In love I hold you for rescue and safekeeping, but now you have done ill to me, friend, to betray my right name, and call down my doom upon me, from which I would lie hid." But Gwendor answered, "The doom lies in yourself, not in your name." In that time of respite and hope, when because of the deeds of the Mormegil, the power of Morgoth was stemmed west of Sirion, and all the woods had peace, Morwen fled at last from Dol Guldur with Nienor, her daughter, and adventured the long journey to Thingol's halls. There, new grief awaited her, for she found Turin gone, and to Doriath there had come no tidings since the dragon helm had vanished from the lands west of Sirion. But Morwen remained in Doriath with Nienor as guests of Thingol and Melian, and were treated with honour. Chapter 11. The Fall of Nargothrond. When 5 years had passed since Turin came to Nargothrond in the spring of the year, there came 2 elves, and they named themselves Gelmir and Arminas, of the people of Finarfin. And they said that they had an errand to the lord of Nargothrond. Turin now commanded all the forces of Nargothrond, and ruled all matters of war. Indeed, he was become stern and proud, and would order all things as he wished or thought good. They were brought therefore before Turin. But Gelmir said, "It is to Orodreth, Finarfin's son, that we would speak." And when Orodreth came, Gelmir said to him, "Lord, we were of Angrod's people, and we have wandered far since the Nirnaeth, but of late we have dwelt among Círdan's following by the mouths of Sirion. And on a day he called us and bade us go to you, for Ulmo himself, the Lord of Waters, had appeared to him and warned him of great peril that draws near to Nargothrond." But Orodreth was wary. And he answered, "Why then do you come hither out of the north? Or perhaps you had other errands also?" And Arminas said, "Yes, lord. Ever since the Nirnaeth I have sought for the hidden kingdom of Turgon, and I have found it not. And in this search I fear now that I have delayed our errand hither over long. For Círdan sent us along the coast by ship, for secrecy and speed, and we were put ashore in Drengist. But among the sea folk are some that came south in past years as messengers from Turgon, and it seemed to me, from their guarded speech, that maybe Turgon dwells still in the north, and not in the south, as most believe. But we have found neither sign nor rumour of what we sought." "Why do you seek Turgon?" said Orodreth. because it is said that his kingdom shall stand longest against Morgoth, answered Arminas. And these words seemed to Orodreth ill-omened, and he was displeased. Then tarry not in Nargothrond, said he, for here you will hear no news of Turgon, and I need none to teach me that Nargothrond stands in peril. Be not angered, lord, said Gelmir, if we answer your questions with truth, and our wandering from the straight path hither has not been fruitless, for we have passed beyond the reach of your furthest scouts. We have traversed Dorlomin, and all the lands under the eaves of Ered Wethryn, and we have explored the pass of Sirion, spying out the ways of the enemy. There is a great gathering of orcs and evil creatures in those regions, and a host is mustering about Sauron's isle. I know it, said Turin. Your news is stale. If the message of Círdan was to any purpose, it should have come sooner. At least, lord, you shall hear the message now, said Gelmir to Orodreth. Hear, then, the words of the Lord of Waters. Thus he spoke to Círdan. The evil of the north has defiled the springs of Sirion, and my power withdraws from the fingers of the flowing waters. But a worse thing is yet to come forth. Say, therefore, to the Lord of Nargothrond, shut the doors of the fortress, and go not abroad. Cast the stones of your pride into the loud river, that the creeping evil may not find the gate. These words seemed dark to Orodreth, and he turned as ever to Turin for counsel. But Turin mistrusted the messengers, and he said in scorn, What does Círdan know of our wars, who dwell nigh to the enemy? Let the mariner look to his ships. But if in truth the Lord of Waters would send us counsel, let him speak more plainly. Otherwise, to one trained in war it will seem better in our case to muster our strength, and go boldly to meet our foes, ere they come too nigh. Then Gelmir bowed before Orodreth, and said, I have spoken as I was bidden, lord, and he turned away. But Arminas said to Turin, Are you, indeed, of the house of Hador, as I have heard said? Here I am named Agarwain, the black sword of Nargothrond, answered Turin. You deal much, it seems, in guarded speech, friend Arminas. It is well that Turgon's secret is hid from you, or soon it would be heard in Angband. A man's name is his own. And should the son of Húrin learn that you have betrayed him when he would be hid, then may Morgoth take you and burn out your tongue. Arminas was dismayed by the black wrath of Turin, but Gelmir said, He shall not be betrayed by us, Agarwain. Are we not in council behind closed doors, where speech may be plainer? And Arminas, I deem, questioned you, since it is known to all that dwell by the sea, that Ulmo has great love for the house of Hador, and some say that Húrin and Húor, his brother, came once into the hidden realm. If that was so, then he would speak of it to none, neither the great nor the less, and least of all to his son in childhood, answered Turin. Therefore I do not believe that Arminas asked this of me in order to learn aught of Turgon. I mistrust such messengers of mischief. Save your mistrust, said Arminas in anger. Gelmir mistakes me. I asked because I doubted what here seems believed, for little indeed do you resemble the kin of Hador, whatever your name. And what do you know of them? Said Turin. Húrin I have seen, answered Arminas, and his fathers before him, and in the wastes of Dorlomin I met with Tuor, son of Hur, Hurin's brother. And he is like his fathers, as you are not.
That may be, said Turin, though of Tuor I have heard no word ere now. But if my head be dark and not golden, of that I am not ashamed, for I am not the first of sons in the likeness of his mother. And I come through Morwen Elethwen of the house of Beor, and the kindred of Beren Camlost.
I spoke not of the difference between the black and the gold, said Arminas, but others of the house of Hador bear themselves otherwise, and Tuor among them, for they use courtesy, and they listen to good counsel, holding the lords of the West in awe. But you, it seems, will take counsel with your own wisdom, or with your sword only, and you speak haughtily. And I say to you, Agarwain Mormegil, that if you do so, others shall be your doom than one of the houses of Hador and Beor might look for.
Other it has ever been, answered Turin, and if, as it seems, I must bear the hate of Morgoth because of the valour of my father, shall I also endure the taunts and ill-boding of a runagate from war, though he claim the kingship of kings? Get you back to the safe shores of the sea.
Then Gelmir and Arminas departed and went back to the south. But despite Turin's taunts, they would gladly have awaited battle beside their kin. And they went only because Círdan had bidden them, under the command of Ulmo, to bring back word to him of Nargothrond and of the speeding of their errand there. And Orodreth was much troubled by the words of the messengers, but all the more fell became the mood of Turin, and he would by no means listen to their counsels, and least of all would he suffer the great bridge to be cast down, for so much at least of the words of Ulmo were read aright. Soon after the departure of the messengers, Handir, lord of Brethil, was slain. For the orcs invaded his land, seeking to secure the crossings of Teiglin for their further advance. Handir gave them battle, but the men of Brethil were worsted and driven back into their woods. The orcs did not pursue them, for they had achieved their purpose for that time, and they continued to muster their strength in the pass of Sirion. In the autumn of the year, biding his hour, Morgoth loosed upon the people of Narog the great host that he had long prepared, and Glaurung, the father of dragons, passed over Anfoglith, and came thence into the north vales of Sirion, and there did great evil. Under the shadows of Ered Wethrin, leading a great army of orcs in his train, he defiled the Æthelivrin, and thence he passed into the realm of Nargothrond, burning the Talath Tirnan, the guarded plain, between Narog and Teiglin. Then the warriors of Nargothrond went forth, and tall and terrible on that day looked Turin, and the heart of the host was uplifted as he rode on the right hand of Orodreth. But greater far was the host of Morgoth than any scouts had told, and none but Turin, defended by his dwarf mask, could withstand the approach of Glaurung. The elves were driven back and defeated on the field of Tumhalad, and there all the pride and host of Nargothrond withered away. Orodreth the king was slain in the forefront of the battle, and Gwyndor, son of Gwylin, was wounded to the death. But Turin came to his aid, and all fled before him. And he bore Gwyndor out of the rout, and escaping to a wood, there laid him on the grass. Then Gwyndor said to Turin, Let bearing pay for bearing. But ill-fated was mine, and vain is yours, for my body is marred beyond healing, and I must leave Middle-earth. And though I love you, son of Húrin, yet I rue the day
that I took you from the orcs. But for your prowess and your pride, still I should have love and life, and Nargothrond should yet stand a while. Now, if you love me, leave me. Haste you to Nargothrond, and save Finduilas. And this last I say to you, she alone stands between you and your doom. If you fail her, it shall not fail to find you. Farewell. Then Turin sped back to Nargothrond, mustering such of the rout as he met with on the way. And the leaves fell from the trees in a great wind as they went, for the autumn was passing to a dire winter. But Glaurung and his host of orcs were there before him because of his rescue of Gwyndor. And they came suddenly, ere those that were left on guard were aware what had befallen on the field of Tumalad. In that day the bridge that Turin had caused to be built over Narog proved an evil, for it was great and mightily made, and could not swiftly be destroyed, and thus the enemy came readily over the deep river. And Glaurung came in full fire against the doors of Felagund, and overthrew them, and passed within. And even as Turin came up, the ghastly sack of Nargothrond was well nigh achieved. The orcs had slain or driven off all that remained in arms, and they were even then ransacking the great halls and chambers, plundering and destroying. But those of the women and maidens that were not burned or slain, they had herded on the terrace before the doors, as slaves to be taken to Angband. Upon this ruin and woe Turin came, and none could withstand him, or would not, though he struck down all before him, and passed over the bridge, and hewed his way towards the captives. And now he stood alone, for the few that had followed him had fled into hiding. But in that moment Glaurung the Fell issued from the gaping doors of Felagund, and lay behind, between Turin and the bridge. Then suddenly he spoke by the evil spirit that was in him, saying, "Hail, son of Húrin! Well met!" Then Turin sprang about and strode against him, and fire was in his eyes, and the edges of Gurthang shone as with flame. But Glaurung withheld his blast, and opened wide his serpent eyes, and gazed upon Turin. Without fear Turin looked in those eyes as he raised up his sword, and straightway he fell under the dreadful spell of the dragon, and was as one turned to stone. Thus long they stood unmoving, silent, before the great doors of Felagund. Then Glaurung spoke again, taunting Turin.
"Evil have been all your ways, son of Húrin," said he. "Thankless fosterling, outlaw, slayer of your friend, thief of love, usurper of Nargothrond, captain foolhardy, and deserter.